Welcome back. You're in the huddle on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. NBA playoffs in full force. And, well, the NBA playoffs not kind to us up here in New England as the Celtics down 2-0 as the number one seed to the Chicago Bulls. Let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line right now and find ourselves NBA expert Chris Mannix, and also a big part of NBC Sports Radio. Chris, simply put, how did we get here for the Celtics?
Well, I mean, it starts with the matchup, and Chicago was a far more difficult matchup than I think anyone expected. They were a hot team coming into the postseason, but I'm not sure anyone saw, you know, this coming. What we should have seen is that this Bulls group is built for the playoffs. They're an older team, so they benefit from a more extended schedule, no back-to-backs. By the time Game 3 rolls around, they'll have a couple of full days off. They're a great rebounding team, which you have to be in the postseason. And they've got stars. Jimmy Butler, Rajon Rondo, Dwayne Wade, to different degrees, are star-caliber players. And they're playing up to their potential in this series. Couple that with the problems that Boston has had with Isaiah Thomas, the tragedy there. And this is kind of a perfect storm of a bad time for the Celtics.
Your thoughts overall on the Isaiah Thomas situation? I certainly think it played a story in Game 1, but I don't think it had anything to do with the Celtics losing. Do you?
Well, I think actually Game 2, Isaiah was more impacted than he was in Game 1. In Game 1, you know, I watched him a lot during pregame. Obviously, the emotion he wore on his face, but he was aggressive, and he looked a little bit more into it, I think, than he was in Game 2. In Game 2, he really looked out of sorts. I mean, he was targeting the referees early. He was going after teammates. He, again, wasn't all that demonstrative on the court. He just looked like he was a little bit listless out there. The 20 points that he scored, I thought, were pretty misleading. And again, I think his teammates are affected by you know, the kind of need to walk on eggshells around him at times. So, you know, it's the kind of thing that you're loath to comment on or say this, but, you know, if Isaiah Thomas isn't right, you know, mentally in time for Game 3, maybe he should stay home. Maybe he should stay with his family and be there and address what he needs to address in his personal life. Boston obviously would struggle offensively, but maybe going with a defensive-heavy unit led by Marcus Smart, maybe that's the smarter way to go for Game 3.
Chris, has the biggest detriment in this series been the Celtics' inability to rebound as a whole? They've been out-rebounded in both games, Game 1 much more so than Game 2. Is it the lack of scoring options beyond Isaiah, or is it just the Bulls' veteran presence?
Well, I mean, I think the inside game and the lack of offensive support are the two most significant issues here. I mean, Chicago's been owning the glass. I mean, you're right, the numbers... the gap was closed a little bit in Game 2, but the three-point shooting for Chicago kind of carried the day for them. But Robin Lopez, for two consecutive games, has been a monster for this team. I mean, they're making Robin Lopez look like, in his prime, Hakeem Olajuwon out there. But the way he's consuming rebounds, knocking down 16, 17-foot jump shots, I mean, he has been unbelievable for Chicago in this series. And Boston has no answers. I mean, you saw Tyler Zeller get the start in the second half of Game 2. I wouldn't be surprised if Tyler Zeller gets the start in Game 3. I mean, they have got to find a way to put a big body on Robin Lopez. And look, you know, Amir Johnson, you know, you don't lose much with him offensively. If Zeller can give you more of a physical presence, I think you've got to roll the dice and try it.
Chris, a couple guys getting grief. One guy nationally, one guy here in this studio. Brad Stevens, 2-10 in the playoffs, so I guess I've got two questions. One, is Brad Stevens overrated as a coach, or is this a personnel problem as a whole? And two, what's up with Al Horford? A max player, 7 points, only 8 shot attempts. What's up with these guys?
Yeah, I mean, look, Brad Stevens is not overrated as a coach. Brad Stevens is an elite head coach, and if he lost his job tomorrow, he would have 10 offers the day after. I mean, across the league, Andrew, they recognize what kind of coach this guy is. But the problem is strictly the personnel. I mean, the rebounding is an issue, but not having that secondary scoring option is a major problem. When Isaiah Thomas goes off the floor or when he's ineffective, they have problems manufacturing offense. This is the reason that you have heard Gordon Hayward's name connected to the Celtics and why you will hear his name connected to the Celtics for the next couple of months. They need another guy on the perimeter that could take the ball, attack the basket, and create offense for himself. When Isaiah can't do it, There's nobody else on the team right now that's capable of doing it. So, you know, there's only so much a coach can do, only so many tricks he can pull out. When you're outgunned in a series, that's a personnel matter, not the coaching.
Chris Mannix, NBA expert and part of NBC Sports Radio with us here on The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com. All right, let's switch gears here. Russell Westbrook goes for 50 yesterday, gets another triple-double, but it took him an absurd amount of shots to get there, and the Thunder end up losing. Nationally, the haters of Russell Westbrook are going to have a field day with this. What's your thoughts just on Russell Westbrook, the player, in general?
Well, I love Russell Westbrook, the player. He's as fierce a competitor as you're going to find in the NBA, and his skills speak for themselves. What I would say, though, is there are times, and you saw it in the fourth quarter against the Rockets, where Russell takes on too much of it on himself. For most of the first three quarters of that game, he was trusting his teammates. He was making the right pass. He was still putting up shots, but there weren't a lot of forced shots in that game. Fourth quarter, he was just jacking them up, and he can't do that. Now, I think he knows that, you know, just how important he is to that offense and how that offense completely crumbles when he's off the floor. But in the fourth quarter, to win a playoff game, when teams are keying on you, you've got to trust your teammates, and Russell didn't do that. That's something that's been a bit of a problem for him over the last few years of his career. And if he is going to truly be on a winning team, a championship-level team, when that Thunder team starts adding pieces to it, he's going to have to trust them and not take it all on himself in the fourth quarter.
Not to compare apples and oranges, but just because I know the storm about Russell Westbrook that's been out there today, I'm going to ask this question. Is it Chris Paul's failures to win greater? He's had better teammates. He's got an elite head coach, people think. And he may be, he's got all the tools in his toolkit too. Chris Paul can't win. Why doesn't he get the grief that Westbrook gets?
Yeah, he's starting to. And look, if this season ends abruptly, and the most likely scenario is that it ends with a really rough four-game performance against Golden State in the conference semifinals, the critics will start descending on Chris Paul. Again, I mean, look, it's an accurate statement to say he's underachieved. There have been times that the Clippers have had some injuries. I don't look at last season as being a referendum on Chris Paul because he went out, Blake Griffin went out, and sometimes that's just the dice that rolls for you. But there have been years past, look back, what was it, a few years ago when they lost to Houston in that second round, and you say, look, that team was built to win. That team's a championship-level team, and you get beat by the Rockets in the second round, that's on your stars. So, no question, Chris Paul, if this season goes south, and it probably will, he will once again be looked at as an underachiever.
Chris Mannix with us here on The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN. Chris, I heard you on The Herd with Colin Cowherd maybe a week and a half ago, really, really railing against the problem the NBA has with stars sitting out. I guess I have two ideas to help make the regular season more meaningful. What if we reduce the number of teams that get into the playoffs like in baseball, or what if we reduce the number of games in the playoff series so that seeding actually matters?
Well, I mean, look, those solutions probably would have an impact on the problem, but it all comes down to money. And somebody in both sides actually would have to give back significant chunks of money if you reduce the number of playoff teams, because networks buy playoff games. That's why they invest in the product. They want the ratings that come with postseason games. So they want as many as they possibly can get. And, you know, there was a time when it was a best-of-five first-round series, and a lot of people like that. But there's more money to be made on a best-of-seven series, so everybody got back on board with it. If you can convince Michelle Roberts and Adam Silver to take less money for both sides, absolutely. I say go for it. Make that happen. But I think we all know in this society that's never going to happen.
Chris, I'll get you out of here on this question. He could end up being a Celtic if things go right. What are you hearing about Lonzo Ball, A, as an NBA prospect? Is he the number one prospect in the draft? Is he a top three prospect the Celtics could get? And will his dad scare off teams from taking him?
No, the dad doesn't scare off teams all that much. In college, it's more of an issue. A coach has to deal with a parent far more than an NBA coach or an NBA general manager has to deal with a parent. They're professionals in the pro ranks. They're getting paid. It's not the same dynamic. Sure, I think LeVar Ball could be a distraction, particularly if he winds up in a major market like a Boston or New York, but it wouldn't stop, you know, these teams from drafting him. As far as Lonzo goes, I think he's solidly locked in as number two. I mean, he, depending on the team, I guess he could leapfrog Markelle Fultz, and if Fultz has some tough workouts, maybe Ball could jump in that slot. But, you know, there are people out there that believe that Fultz is a great point guard in the NBA. He has that Russell Westbrook, early Derrick Rose type of feel to him. I think he's going to be the guy that goes one, and Ball will go number two.
Chris Mannix, NBA expert, part of NBC Sports Radio, with us today on The Huddle. Chris, thanks for being with us. Enjoy the playoffs, and hopefully we're talking to you again after some better Celtics news.
No problem. My pleasure.